The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
Hello, everybody, and this is Brandon Jose for another episode of the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about a guest we've been looking forward to having on is Marie Cisneros. Her new book, Haunted Muskegon, just recently came out, so we'll be talking about that today. First, going to introduce my co-host, Tanya.
Hi, everybody. It's Tanya Geyer-Sager, zooming in from Columbus, Ohio area.
Nice to meet you, Tanya.
Nice to meet you, Marie.
And of course, the author, Marie Cisneros.
Hello, everybody.
All right. So, Marie, maybe just get started with how did you get about writing the book?
I'll start it out with the Muskegon Channel. A couple of years ago, I had suggested having a paranormal show for the channel, and Mr. Andy O'Reilly, who runs the O'Reilly Media Group, you know, contacted me, and I started doing the show, and I think I did that for maybe about a year, and I was contacted by an editor in Charlottesville, acquisitions editor, who had seen an article that I had done. I believe it was the one with Chutan Noir, and we did a show on a segment on the at the Lakeshore Museum on ghosts or monsters out of the Great Lakes. So they were looking for someone in the Muskegon area that did paranormal type stuff. And what they do is they contact local historians, you know, to do books for the series Haunted America. And so they suggested that I put in a book proposal, which I did, and it was accepted. So it took me about a year to write, and now we have it.
All right. So now one of the things I was very excited about in this book, and I just got my copy, so I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing yet. I'm like, that's because it just dropped, or just came out. One of the things I thought was very exciting, because it has a couple of my stories in there from the Torrent House and LST 393.
Yes,
it does. Stories by a few of the guests that we've had on, Darren Dykehouse, the Lakeshore Paranormal. I think this is at LST 393 and Grasp, Bill and Connie Jones. We got another ones we've had on our show that I know they contributed some stories in there.
Yeah, they're definitely, everybody's instrumental in, you know, in the book, you know, for the research that you've done, and, you know, Darren and Chutan, she's, you know, helped out with the chapter on the Christmas tree ship. So definitely a huge contribution to that. So I couldn't have done it without you guys. So there is 13 stories, but a lot of it is kind of like the history of the, you know, the houses themselves, and, you know, the people that it, you know, that live there. But there's stories on, or a story on, you know, on the LST, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the investigations that were done. But my focus has been on the research aspect, kind of, you know, not so much the woo-woo type, you know, aspect of the ghosts, not a lot of fluff. So, and I thought, I wanted it to be informative, you know, as well as entertaining. So, and gives a pretty good history of Muskegon area.
I kind of noticed that kind of when I was going through the book, that it's a lot of, there's a lot of history in there, which for me, I love history. So I think definitely to people that aren't even into the paranormal, I think they would get a lot out of this, a lot of this book, if they're, you know, interested in kind of the history of Muskegon, because it does have a lot of the buildings there, a lot of the older homes, like the Hackley House, Torrent House, and Hume House. And there's a lot of stuff that, and LST 393 for like kind of World War II, history, because that was a World War II transport ship, and
Yeah, so I'm going to ask, so being an Ohioan and not being very familiar with Michigan as much, where does the Muskegon area fall in Michigan?
Muskegon sits in Muskegon County and very close to Muskegon Lake, which is an inlet of Lake Michigan. So we're actually a port city.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be, advertisement used to be called, the port city. So, I mean, we had a long history and basically started during the lumbering era in the 1800s. A lot of the lumber barons built the ships to haul lumber. So, it was a major port, and it's one of the, five, I'm not quite sure. That is in the book, ports along the Great Lakes between here and Chicago and I think Milwaukee. So we're right there, right here on the lakeshore. We've been around a while, early 1700s.
Which lake was, what is it?
Well, Muskegon Lake is, it's an inlet from Lake Michigan. So.
Okay.
Yeah, we're right on Lake Michigan, basically. We're the lake shore. They call us the lake shore a lot. So it's kind of like a sister city to like the Grand Haven, not Grand Haven, but like Grand Rapids area, which is, a lot bigger city, but we're kind of like grouped in together with that.
I always like to tell, because I love history too, but it's also like geography. The area, especially your area, I find that cities like Muskegon seem to be active because of you have those large bodies of water nearby.
Yeah, they have been. They were actually, a lot of the history that I did, with the lumber barons, which is Hackley, because there are stories in there on the Hackley House and the Hume House. And Torn House, which are three very large and very elegant, very expensive homes in the Muskegon area back in the early 1800s, the Victorian era. And nowadays it would be worth, like millions. It took them, these are absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous houses. And, but they were, a lot of them were built from the lumbering industry. So, the port city itself that's basically what it started as. It's a lumbering community. So we had 47 lumber mills in the town here.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called Lumbertown. One of our hockey teams used to be called the Lumberjacks. So
makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So with it being, like I said, with you being into the paranormal, do you find that it is a little bit more active because like maybe that water nearby that gives it maybe that extra energy?
It's possible. I think maybe, Muskegon started out as a Native American village back in the early 1700s. And I think if you're looking at energies from, like spirit, spiritual energies, and that it could be the energies that are there from, all of that going back historically, Native Americans, the lumbering people that were here, it's what, 250 years of history. The homes themselves are, 18th or 19th century houses. So I think a lot of the energy when it's there is based in the houses, but then of course you have the ley lines. There are some areas in here that I think set on those ley lines. Of course, those have to do with like the water tables and those pools of energy. So very possible. And water is life. So I'm sure there's definitely that aspect to it. So it's a good question. Mm-hmm. Not quite sure if I answered it right, but
I did a really good job answering it because I always have Cincinnati, like down in Cincinnati, it's highly active down in their downtown, which is right off the Ohio River. And I always like to try to figure out maybe it's because of that extra energy that the constant moving water can help produce, because spirits are energy or ghosts are energy.
Well, and I'm sorry, go ahead. Muskegon does set on a, actually not really set on it, but there is a thing called the Michigan Triangle. And I do talk about that in the book too, is that it's actually maybe even more active than the Bermuda Triangle. It's from, goes from Wisconsin to Ludington, I think Manitowoc, Wisconsin, to Ludington down to South Bend. And Michigan has had over, I think, anywhere from, actually the whole Great Lakes, is there's been 6,000 to 8,000 ships that have went down since, you know, the beginning of shipping. And one of my chapters is on the first, Michigan's first ghost ship, and that is the Griffin. That's from the early 1700s. But we have that Michigan Triangle. There's a lot of activity there. A lot of ships go down, but Lake Michigan is very volatile. And they say it's because it's actually, it rocks more than an ocean because there's just, it's a smaller space that it has to, you know, to do. So there's a lot of, there's probably a lot of energy there, you know, whether or not we have anything going on with our triangle, you know, that could be part of it too. So,
but, I mean, you pointed out too, the fact that Michigan is a lot of native land up there. So that's another aspect to why there might be paranormal activity up that way, because of all the natives that used to inhabit that.
Yes, that's very true. Nunica Cemetery, which it's also, you know, in there, a chapter on Nunica Cemetery is, I guess there was a Native American cemetery very close, either close to that, or that cemetery was built on top of the Native American cemetery, and they used to dig up bones, you know, from there. When they were clear in the area, they would dig up, you know, artifacts and bones and that, you know, be when they were building the town. So, I mean, definitely that energy, you know, that spiritual, you know, you don't, you know, when you disturb their graves, you know, that does.
Oh, yeah. Because I know here in Ohio, we've got several mounds. I mean, we got Serpent Mound, our biggest one.
Right,
so,
right, yeah.
So when there's any kind of disturbance there, they actually have a lot of activity that takes up. So
I would love to go to Serpent Mound. I would absolutely love to go there.
So. It's actually a very beautiful place. I haven't gone lately because last time I went, some of the kids like at school group, and the kids were very disrespectful. And I was like, I have to go because these spirits are going to be mad.
Right. Yeah.
So
you can feel it.
So while you were writing the book, since you said it took you a year to correlate and get it finished, what was your favorite story to research and write about?
Oh, I think the two is the first story, and that's called 18 Roses for Annie. And I think I was just struck with, you know, her story as being a young girl that died at a very young age. So I think that really hit me, and just the sadness of it. But I tend to like military stuff. So I think that the LST 393 is fascinating to me, both for its history, you know, and, you know, the investigation that was done with, you know, Brandon and, you know, and Grasp and all that, you know, the things that they had picked up there and seen apparitions is pretty amazing. So I think those are my two favorite chapters. I did actually a lot more in depth, you know, on the LST. I've had a chance to, I went there for their D-Day celebration because the LST was there on D-Day. And so they have celebration every year to do that. So I took a lot of photographs of their, you know, reenactments on D-Day and that. So it's very moving to even walk into the LST. And they were actually my first, that was the first video that I did for the Muskegon channel for Paranormal Muskegon, was going on that ship. And the minute I walked in, I could just feel it. I got the chills just now, just thinking about it. And there were actually some points where I felt like I actually walked on the ship before. And it was, you know, walking up the gangplank. I'm like, oh, this feels really, really familiar to me. Obviously, I'd never been there before. But so I don't know. Maybe it was.
Well, you haven't been there before in this life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so. Could be the love of the military and ship stories and that. I do love the ship stories or train stories, you know. A ghost train would be phenomenal. I need to find
there's been I know with here in Ohio we've had multiple stories like with the haunted, and one of them was in Cleveland, I believe it is. There's a ghost train. Mm-hmm. I still haven't gotten up there to investigate that yet.
That would be fantastic. Well, yeah, Muskegon, and has a big, there was a big history with it comes to the railroads too, because they were mm-hmm. the railroads were built here to come here, you know, to haul lumber. So, I mean, one of the first railroads went to Newaygo, Michigan. So a lot of history there too with that. So I love to take photographs of old, you know, the train tracks and train stations and that. So it's like, one of my hobbies, I guess. So,
well, what actually drew you to the paranormal? Like, what was your first experience?
I'd have to say is I think that I was just pretty much from a very young age, just exposed to those type of stories. My grandmother used to, and actually my mother too, told a story of my grandfather seeing a ghost on a bridge. You know, and so I knew about, you know, that aspect of it, the ghost, but it was also things of, you know, like the superstitions, you know, like they come up with, you know, good luck charms and things like that. Because my grandmother was, you know, Pennsylvania Dutch, you know, a lot of those stories in the mythology comes down from that. From that uh-huh. line, with that and herbal medicine. So I've always known about that. But I think it was, or the raining, she said she actually saw it rain frogs. I think it was frogs. She actually said she had seen it rain frogs. So I'm 10 years old and figured, like, you know, I have a very analytical mind. Uh-huh. So, you know, why would it rain frogs? So those type of, I've always been very much into research of anything and everything. So I think I've spent the last 30 years of my life researching a lot of different subjects. So, I mean, of course the paranormal is there too. And not just, you know, just anything mysterious, you know, uh-huh. anything, you know, metaphysical or, you know, different spiritual, you know, aspects of it, the consciousness, you know, who we are as a species, you know, things like that. And so all of that stuff is very, very fascinating to me. You know, I basically live for it. But I was actually, I was born in Laredo. And the barrio I lived on was called Ghost Town. So, and I actually didn't know that until a few years ago. And my brother's older than me had mentioned that is so cool, the Ghost Town. It's still a neighborhood. Wow. If that's not called a barrio anymore, it's a neighborhood, so it's still there.
It's just funny how things can go full circle like that.
Oh yeah, that's true.
I always say people go, it's a coincidence. I said, no, there's no such thing.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. So we meet people because we need to meet people for certain things, you know, whether it's a, you know, a karmic bond or a, you know, some sort of thing, that there's a reason. So always is.
Oh yeah, there always is. Yeah. So with that parent, like I said, you said your grand from your grandparents telling stories. I know I had a great grandmother that told stories. So, what do you, just because I'm going to get a little personal? Do you remember like the story that is your favorite story to hear from her?
Well, that one was the one I remember the most. And the story goes that he was walking on a bridge, and there was a man, I don't know, I guess he was walking towards him. See, it's kind of a little fuzzy now because I haven't really told it in a while, but he was walking towards him and asked him for a light, you know, cigarette, and you know, my grandfather, I think maybe he smoked a pipe, but you know, I don't know if he lit a cigarette or whatever, but after he passed by him, my grandfather turned to look and he was gone. And of course it was, I don't know if it was a dark and stormy night, but it was probably like a foggy night, but this, they lived in Oceana County. Uh-huh. So it's Crystal Valley, I think. So I always thought that was a very pretty interesting story. And it was one I believed wholeheartedly my whole life, you know, that my grandpa saw a ghost. So
I mean, I have the same thing. My grandmother would tell us the stories, and I, to this day, well, because I can see and communicate with them, you know, I totally believe she saw them. People are like, oh, how do you know? And I was like, sometimes you just have to believe. Oh,
yeah, you don't know how you know, you just know. Yeah, mm-hmm. You can feel that energy. My sister actually, see, I don't really have that ability. I mean, I know, I'm pretty sure that there's, you know, that energy there. I wholeheartedly believe that, you know, the possibility. I've never seen one, mm-hmm. but my sister does have that ability. She's seen a few ghosts. She's had some poltergeist kind of activity in her home. She had there was a house in Whitehall, Michigan that they lived in for quite a while. And they had a mirror that she felt had some energy in there. And they finally had to get rid of it. So I'm not quite sure what the specifics were about it, but they've had things like objects, you know, fly off the wall, you know, like roll across the room, uh-huh. you know, wall plaques and that. And she can feel the energy. I can a little bit, even during this research here in Muskegon for the book, there were a few times that, you know, I would go in there when the one was the Torrin House. And it is it's like a masonry buildings, one of the most expensive homes at the time that they built in Muskegon. But it is used as a genealogy and local history mm-hmm. Building or for the local library. So when I went in there, I was using the microfiche machine and the librarian had set me down at it. And so I only worked it for like a couple of minutes working the microfiche and it just stopped working just completely. I'm thinking, oh, okay, she's going to think I broke it. But I was looking through old newspapers, you know, looking for information. Uh-huh. So, I mean, it quit. And then I would hear things like in the other room, it's just the librarian and me that were in the building. And, but when I got home, it was like the energy stayed with me.
Yeah.
I got home and just like things would like roll off the floor, just, you know, like two or three things would roll off the floor and then something else like a bag on the floor just moved on its own and dishes out in the kitchen. And I'm like, oh, okay, I just need to like clean this energy.
You had a visitor.
So yeah, just attached itself to me a little bit there, but it only lasted a little while, but. It also could be.
Maybe I think maybe it liked that you were researching information. Yes, for their story.
I agree. So, I mean, you think that way. It's like, you know, that you're in a place that they say is, you know, has ghost activity. So, you know, you kind of feel that. So then you get a little spooked, you know, but you can draw that energy and you can actually, what I was probably doing was actually manifesting those things on my own. So. Uh-huh. Not to be, you know, like, I'm not saying I can move objects around, but it was just.
Well, I understand the concept where you're going with that one.
Oh, yeah. I know that does happen too.
Because there's times even with me being with my gifts where I've been to some place, the energy's high where, you know, most people would be spooked out and I'm not. I come home and things happen at the house and I'm like, okay, not funny. You didn't spook me then. You're not going to spook me now.
Yeah.
So I understand that where you go home and you got that mindset and then you come in and like, okay, I'm quiet. Why are things happening here?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was like following home. Like mine was Nick Fink's from like a barn at Comstock Park. Where they used to have like a jukebox that would like turn on by itself, even though it was unplugged. It would start playing. So like one time I investigated there, I had like the home stereo all of a sudden was one of like the turn knobs like you click it off and it turn, you turn it up to get the volume to go up. And all of a sudden, like that one would all of a sudden just start cranking up. It would turn on by itself, start cranking up. And I'm like, oh, I think something. I was like, I unplugged it. I'm like, okay, maybe let's take care of it. Still turning on and cranking up. Though there's no power going to it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. A little freak you out a little bit, right?
Yeah. Anybody might get a little spooked when the
electricity's
on. I'm like, I would think twice about that one myself.
Yeah, it's definitely got its own electrical energy going there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the most kind of like the energy that I felt in any of the buildings down here was actually isn't one that I was is in the book, but it's an industrial museum. I'm not quite sure what the building is. I think it's, I can't think of it offhand, but it's a three-story museum now, an industry of Muskegon. So a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff in there, but, you know, like mechanical things and that. But when I went up on the third floor, there was one room that the minute I walked into it, I started feeling very weak. And just like, I felt like just, yeah, just all the energy just like totally drained out of me. And I smelled this strong perfume. Like, well, maybe it's the ladies ahead. I am a skeptic. You know, I am. I'm a researcher. I worked 10 years for MUFON. So, I mean, you have to take the view of finding any logical, you know, reasons for what it is people say they see, you know, and that especially, I mean, even that way with ghosts too, there's no definitive answer, you know, what it is. So, but I walked in and I just like, man, I have to get out of here. So, you know, but the minute I walked out of the room, it stopped. So I would kind of like to go up there again just to see if the, you know, it happens again, just as a control thing, you know, to you know, get that experimental thing going there. Like, I don't know if it was just, maybe I didn't feel good, but I do tend to get that way in the older homes. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple of times, in a house that was very old, and maybe it's just mold. I couldn't even go in it. I had to sit outside. Like, I can't go in there. I'm just like, feels like your sugar level, you know, goes down.
Yeah.
And I have been told that the people that do the, you know, the ghost research or, you know, the actual investigations that mm-hmm. they use your energy, you know, to manifest, you know, to do things. So like, that's possibly it. So.
See, when I do readings prior to going into doing readings, I try to energize myself personally. Like I try to have multiple batteries. I feel like, and that way when I go in and do the reading, they're not taking other people's energy. And I do the same thing in investigations. It's like, I want them to not drain our batteries. I'd rather them drain my extra batteries because you know, they like to drain batteries. Yeah. And then by the time I'm leaving, I feel like the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because all the energy that I had stored is coming back to me.
Right.
So like, yeah, it's interesting to, especially older homes. I mean, you guys have those beautiful, I've seen pictures of some of those homes in that area, and they're just absolutely, I have I have to say, a love for Victorian style homes. Oh. So those are just absolutely gorgeous.
They are the top of the line when it comes to the Victorian homes, because they were, quite expensive to build even then. Charles Hackley, who's the founder of Muskegon, there's a library, the park, he built a hospital, the art museum, but that house, I'm quite sure, I think it was, don't quote me on it, but it was like really expensive at the time, the 1800s, but has stained glass windows. These wood carvings are just phenomenal. But I do have some pictures in the book, you know, of the house, some of the, you know, the photographs of the inside. And
it's wonderful to see the detail. Like our architecture is nice to look at, but not like the detail they used to put in. And especially when you got, I know in Michigan, I think it's Michigan, where there's one where they he built the house specifically, like, and there's many stories like this where they built that Grand Victorian, their Grand Victorian home specifically for the woman they loved. But I guess it's kind of the one part about the romantic side of some of those homes. Was there any kind of story like that with any of the homes in the book? Sorry.
Something similar, I think. John Torrent, the house that he built, you know, was for his wife. I'm not quite sure if she, you know, how long she lived for that, but he actually built it in rivalry with Charles Hackley. So, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, there is some, you know, some, definitely some history there, not so much the romantic side. It was, that was a big rivalry there. They were rivals, and he wanted the best house that cost more money than Charles Hackley. So,
I think that would actually make it a little bit more entertaining to hear that there was a little bit of a rivalry there.
I think it would be worth over $6 million now, the house. I mean, it has this amazing turret on it, and I love that. And there is the investigation on there that Brandon did, you know, at the Torrent House. It is absolutely incredible. So that was just amazing.
And one of the things I kind of wonder on that, because like Torrent always had a one up Hackley, because I think when we were originally going in there, we were trying to get into the Hackley Library, which is like next to it, which Torrent is a part of that. We were trying to get into that building because they had a bunch of, you know, ghost stories there. They're like, well, we'll let you go investigate the Torrent House. So I'm like, well, we'll take it. It's still a cool house if we can't get into the main, you know, our main target or whatever. But then we end up getting activity there. So I was kind of wonder if like John Torrent on the other side is like, yeah, we got it too over here.
Yeah.
With their rivalry, you know.
Still trying to one up each other. That's what
they probably
still are, even. Yeah. It's very true.
Torrent House energy though. Like, yeah, like you're talking about like the energy there. Like ours, when we went upstairs, like you can walk into that one room and it just feels like you just hit a brick wall. Like for a lot of us, when we went through them, there's like this, they have like the one room where, you know, like it's a square or a rectangle or whatever, but then it's got like the rounded corner, and like that one, it just feels, you can just feel the energy just swirl in that corner.
But a little bit of feng shui going there where you don't have those that, you know, collects all that energy. It's just probably just free to move around.
Now if you were asked to do another book, would you do another, like the neighboring county, or what would you be interested in doing?
I thought about that. I would like to, or maybe something in the Whitehall area, because there's a lot of history out there too. Because there had been, you know, quite a few stories, I think, out of like the Grand Haven, you know, Ottawa County, but. I actually would like to do something on like the lumbering era, you know, back, you know, the frontier, because, you know, Muskegon, where before the lumbering era were trappers, you know, fur trappers, because that was a big part of it. So it was like, I would love to find some stories on that, like the fur trappers and the Native American. But even doing a little bit of research, I haven't really found a lot as of yet, but I think they would be great stories. So,
see, I think a lot of that part of our history, like especially history, I love history. And we have so many stories that come out about the gold rush era. And there's few about, you know, the industrial age of, you know, when we were building the railroads, but it's like, I think the one of the biggest markets that we had that keeps getting lost, especially story-wise, is the lumber trade. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so big here in America back in, you know, back, especially in Michigan, Ohio, this part of the world, and it just like everybody forgets about it. So I think that would be interesting to see what, you know, somebody were to find out, because it was such a big industrial age, I mean, for us was the lumber.
Yeah. Well, I do have quite a couple of chapters on that, basically with Charles Hackley, because that is, you know, big part of Muskegon's history is the, you know, the lumber. It's said that Muskegon built the world. The lumber mills here in the city, they rebuilt Chicago after it burned down. So like, yeah, there's, unfortunately though, you know, for the trees, you know, when they take 6 million or 600 million logs out of here, you know, back even by the 1900s, it was gone. You know, they started shutting down and they had to, you know, find a way, it's like, to keep the town going. But yeah, it does. It's, you're right. They don't really think about that. The houses that were built on the, on our, from our lumber.
But, oh yeah. Because I mean, it was such a biz, I mean, such a booming business that we had, you know, the lumber mill and the lumber industry had their form of the Rockefellers, and, you know, that would, there was millionaires and yes. that because of that. And it's just, it's a fact, it, to me, it's fat, anything about history in that aspect is just fascinating, just to know, because it's, you know, there's a rise and then there was the fall, and it's still around, but they don't make the money like they used to. And like you said, it's interesting to see Muskegon built, like they said, built the world. I mean, there was so much that that wood or that reach was that affected not just Michigan, but the world. I mean, a huge part of America.
Yeah, that's very true. They called it, back in that time, the Victorian era in Muskegon, it was the romantic era of Muskegon. We had over more millionaires in Muskegon than in the rest of the country, and all from the lumbering industry. So yeah, and that's where they built those opulent houses. You know, I don't know so much if they did like the, you know, the opulent parties. I'm sure that they had had a few. You know, another story that I did is on the Century Club. So I mean, I did read a little bit about some of the things, the events that they had there back in its heyday. So yeah, I love, you know, and I started doing the, you know, the research on this. And it's like a lot more fascinating than I would have definitely give a credit for when going into it. And like, wow, you know, I've lived here pretty much my whole life. And, you know, when you live in an area, you don't, you know, you do overlook, you know, all of that, you know, all of that history, even in, you know, going to school and you learn Michigan history, you know, that's part of, you know, the curriculum, but you don't get all of those really, really cool details, you know, of the city. So.
They do the same thing here in Ohio. We learn Ohio history, but it's like they don't focus on, like you said, the minor details of your city that would actually spark interest, or they don't really go into detail of like the founders, and they mm-hmm. kind of briefly mention. So yeah, I mean, the fact that you were finding out all these interesting facts and was able to relay it, I want to get myself a copy and read it. Cause like I said, if it's more of history, I'm one of those, I love when I'm reading, I don't want to read the ghost story as much as I want to read the history of the area.
Yeah. Well, and I think that mine is pretty much, I'd have to say at least 75%, 90% of history, mm-hmm. of Muskegon history. And, you know, quarter of it is the ghost stories themselves, but with an aspect of the investigation part of it. I mean, they're more like fictionalized. I fictionalize what the stories have been told about them, not like a made up story, you know, it's, you know, because to me, it's not fiction. You know, these are what people are saying that they have seen. You know, these are saying what they're talking about, what the investigators have found, you know, doing that too. And what, like theories about what it is, you know, what is it? What are ghosts? You know, what are the apparitions? You know, what energy is there that creates them? And what are people seeing? So, but the history is a really big part of it for me. So, and I think that's why people, like you said, I think a lot of people will like it for that aspect too, because I do have a lot of history, you know, in there. I have an eight page bibliography. So it's like, I did a little bit of research for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in this case, when you giving more history than experience, the beauty about the paranormal is that it's most of the time it's personal experiences. I mean, a lot of times we have people that, like, you've gone in and experienced that feeling of weakness all of a sudden. You can't catch that on audio. You can't catch that on video. You experience that, and nobody can, it's hard to explain that away.
Right.
So, I mean, that's why I like the fact that a lot of times with like a book, like I can't, I'm hearing that it's mostly history. I want to get myself a copy and read it more, because I like the history, because what I'm going to experience probably going in is going to be completely different than what you experienced, or even the investigators going in that you talked about in the stories.
Very true. Very true. So, I mean, I love the stories that I put into it, you know, too. You know, I think the history of the Griffin, and that's so long ago, you know, that's early 1700s. It was the first ship to, one of the first ships to sail the Great Lakes. So, I mean, that is just, it's kind of a strange, you know, strange story. So.
And the stranger, the better.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I love ghost stories. I have ghost ships. Yeah. They're the best. One of my favorites, I think.
This is you, the, is there any other, you love, said you love naval, like the military. I'm sorry. I'm stuttering all of a sudden. You love the military aspect. Is there any other military stories other than the one ship? Or is that the one mainly focused on?
It's no, that's, well, there's the Christmas tree ship, stories of that. And that's more like a disappearance, you know, of they called it the Christmas tree ship, but it's the Ralph Simmons. And that was a ship that was owned by Charles Hackley. Well, it went through a few owners, but at one time it was owned by Charles Hackley. So stories, you know, about that and its disappearance, whether or not any sort of bad omens had anything to do with, you know, it's sinking. So, and that, and there's the Griffin and and the LST. So there's three stories of, you know, the shipping industry in there, but
military, was there other than the LST?
No, not military wise, but just kind of like, yeah, just basically it's history, but that's the only one. But I think that that's probably one of my longest chapters, you know, because of all of the information that, you know, was found during their investigation of mm-hmm. that. It was, what was it, Brandon? Like five different paranormal groups?
At the time, GRASP was trying to put together like a paranormal summit to try to get different teams in the area together to work together, or like, you know, to kind of create kind of a baseline of investigation techniques to be able to, you know, share team members, share equipment, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there were five of us on there. We kind of hosted an event there, and then kind of afterwards, like, we all investigated the ship. So yeah, there was GRASP. At the time I was on Kent County Paranormal, but I've recently joined GRASP, Darrendike House of Lakeshore Paranormal. There were two other teams, but their team names escape me at the moment.
Yeah, I think one was out of Traverse City. I don't remember.
That might be.
Oh, yeah. So there were stories, there's been a few stories of the submarine that we have in town, but not in town, you know, it's birth in, you know, in Muskegon, but I think that there's only been like one instance of maybe a death on that, but I'm not sure if they let anyone investigate that at all, and so I didn't really do a story on that, because they were pretty, pretty kind of reluctant to even talk about that just because of the history and, you know, and the veterans and mm-hmm. that. So, and that's the thing about even doing the story on the LST is that you have to be respectful of its history, military history, and all of the people that, you know, have served in the military and their families. So, I mean, that's, mm-hmm. to me, that's the spirit of it right there, is you have to really focus on that and not so much whatever stories or what you find in when it comes to the paranormal. Because mm-hmm. not everybody is really, you know, obviously believe that. So when you start talking about that, they might, you know.
I also think with the LS is that the fact that it was at D-Day also can make it a little bit touchy for some.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Because yeah, that is, you know, that's world history right there. So I mean, we play a huge part of that, but kind of a side to that was just recently I was through the Muskegon Channel did a story, actually a live show, and it was for a birthday party of the captain that used to be the captain of the Milwaukee Clipper. Yeah, see, it's like one of the ships already escaped my name, Milwaukee Clipper. But I went up and started talking to him a little bit, and he said, and I told him, you know, a little bit about, you know, the book, and he said that he was also a captain of the Highway 16, which is what the LST ended up being after they sold it to for commercial use. Mm-hmm. So he was actually the captain of the LST. Is like, how amazing that, you know, talk about no coincidences. I had worn my t-shirt that I had bought at the LST when I was down there. And I went there and I sat down where they were doing the show, and the woman across me says, oh, I work at the Mart dock. I didn't know the birthday party was even for this captain. Mm-hmm. So she said, I work at the Mart dock. And then the man that owns the LST, well, he's on the board of the LST, mm-hmm. came and sat across from me. It's like, and he remembered me because I had interviewed him for that show. So mm-hmm. I was like, that was just amazing to me. It's like, wow. Just like all of those little things fell into place. So I got a chance to talk to him. So, and that was just a few days before my book came out. So
that's amazing. Too bad it didn't happen a little bit before.
Yeah, I know, right on the day. Yeah. That would have been just too phenomenal. But
Maria, I just want to make sure, like, if you have any book signings or anything coming up in terms of that we make the audience aware of that.
Yes, I do. It's going to be, the first one is going to be on the 13th from noon till 2. And it's a little shop called Puzzles, Oddities, and Ends. And I think, I do have the address here. That is at 957 Brookhaven Court. And that's in Muskegon. And I think that's going to be on video too. I think they're going to be doing that through the Muskegon Channel. I'm not quite sure. And then I will be at Berlin Sprague on the 25th on the Muskegon Live Show. And Mr. O'Reilly is going to be doing an interview. I think we're giving away a book. And I probably will be doing some book signings there also. And then on the 27th, I have a little event at the Coffee Factory. So a really awesome coffee shop here in Muskegon. And that is from 10 to 3. So far that's what I have going on. I have some books there to sign for autographed copies. And if anybody wants to come down, if they've already ordered a book, and I will be glad to sign it for them. So, and if anyone wants to order it, you can go to Just Haunted Muskegon or Arcadia Publishing. So. And it should be most bookstores too. I know it's in Barnes and Nobles because I had to get a picture of her while I was there on the bookshelf in my favorite section, paranormal section. So it's a pretty cool moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I found mine, was Barnes and Noble.
I'll have to sign it for you.
I have to find sometime. I'll try to get to one of the books. I know Wayne wanted to go, so make sure to get the information for Wayne. Then do you have any sites or anything like that where if you have any future book signings, like people might be able to find it or anything?
Not yet. I'm still working on getting the books in like the local stores. There's gift shops around here that do carry, you know, the books, like the Hackley House, I think, have a bookshop, little shop, you know, they sell books. So, and they're pretty amenable to most of the things written by Arcadia Publishing. So there's quite a few of that, but so I'm working to get those in there. And so if anyone can't find it around, you know, Barnes & Noble's and that, so Arcadia Publishing would be the best bet, and they have a very quick turnaround. I ordered the books for, you know, for the autograph copies, and they were here in like 3 days. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, is there anything else? We got like a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you'd want to add, or like any, maybe if any of the stories maybe we haven't talked about or anything? Or?
Well, not to reveal too much about
this. Yeah, I don't want to give away too much. Yeah.
I won't have to read it.
Yeah.
Don't give away the ending, right?
Yeah.
So, well, I have, there's a chapter on the Hume House and Hackley House. And it's kind of a little bit on the Carriage House that's, you know, in between them. It's all on, they're like an adjoining lot. So there's stories on them. The first one is a story about a ghost in that looks out the window. You know, they've been said to look out the window of the Hume House. And the Hackley House is, there's quite a few different stories about the Hackley House, some different possibilities of ghosts, you know, there, you know, and who it is. But and Hackley Library, familiar with most people. I think people in Muskegon are more familiar with that. The library is haunted. And I know that there was an investigation here about 6 months ago, but I'm not quite sure what they actually found, because they think they used the Kinect camera for that. They had that set up there, but I'm not quite sure if they ever saw Mr. Hackley. And Nunuk Cemetery, North Shore Hospital site. There's a lot of energy said to go on out there too. That used to be, it was a TB hospital, and then it was a mental hospital. And no one can get on that site. I don't think it's been investigated at all. So, and Century Club, and that's my last story on that. That's the 13th story. It's called Dead Man's Hand. I kind of like cards, so, you know, I had to put one in there. Pretty kind of an interesting story. And that was another one that I happened to come by accident, you know, just in talking with somebody that told me the story of the ghost that said to be there in the Century Club. Another one was told to me by a friend of mine, and that's a house on Division Street here. So some construction workers that encountered a pretty interesting apparition most of the time that they stay there. So
I love the fact that we found them, some of them by accident.
I did. It seems to work out that way. And when I was in I was looking for books, you know, research to do my research. And I went in the library, of course, my favorite place to be anyway. And I had asked I'm not quite sure if she was a reference librarian or just, you know, I don't know what her other job, you know, what her job title is. I don't really remember, but I had kind of asked her where they were and, you know, a couple of particulars about them. And she started telling me that she was actually there for that investigation, you know, that they did at the Hackley House, or the Hackley Library. So she said, she's telling me a little bit about seeing what they'd picked up on the Kinect camera and that. So, and it's like, it always works out that way. You're kind of looking for something, and you know, sure enough, someone comes up, you know, that can help you with it, what you're looking for.
It seems to find you.
Yeah, it certainly does. So she told me, you know, some pretty interesting things about it. And she said that she had felt, you know, a lot of energy, actually more in the Torn House. She said that they, because they go over there, you know, to do work, you know, whatever, you know, files and that. She said that she had more of a malevolent feeling, like a darker feeling when she would go in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's anyone else and experienced that at all. Pretty much everything that, you know, talking to people here is that nothing untoward had ever happened, you know, going into any of these buildings, you know, like, you know, Hackley House, Hume House, Torn House, you know, any of them, that there was any kind of malevolent energy that was going to harm them. So, and that's a good thing, you know, they just go in there, it's like, oh, okay, it's there, you know, you can feel it. So, but it's not harmful to me. So, I think that's pretty much been the consensus. There've been a few things, you know, when they were talking about the Hackley House, that there were a couple people that said, nope, not going in there. Not going to do that to her today, but yeah, pretty much it's like, no, yeah, that's good. We know you're there. Mm-hmm. So just kind of keeping an eye on things, I guess. So
that are going in each other's homes and causing little problems, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't touch anything.
Exactly.
All right. So I'm going to sign off. But the last part reminded me of like the LST when we were on there. Cause that's like one of the ones is like, you know, I heard, you know, we're watching you. Cause like when we were investigating, cause for me, the way that I felt that it was, is because like shortly before that, some guy had stolen stuff from the, out of the ship. And we're in there in the middle of the night with the lights off, you know? So I'm thinking, okay, the spirit out here might think we're burglars and are trying to steal stuff because we're wandering around the ship at night, you know? So that was kind of my take on like why I thought I heard that, you know, like the spirit there letting me know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be pretty chilling.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're watching you.
Yeah.
You know, like, the security guard on the LST. You know?
I think that's what he was doing. He was trying to make sure nothing else was getting stolen. Yeah.
I guess when it comes to the artifacts, they probably do keep a close eye on that. I don't want them.
Yeah.
The energy is still there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it for this episode. Marie, just thank you for joining us today, and I look forward to being able to get through and read that book. I know it's gonna be a lot of good stories, and I love the history in there too, so definitely looking forward to that. And then look forward to having you on again in the future, and let us know if you write any more books. So
very much for having me on the show. And it's nice to meet you, Tanya.
It was nice to meet you, Marie.
Had a good time.
Family-owned Plurimal Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Bizon Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.